pulled out $1.6 million. I think it was about less than 2 years after owning it. Took the rents from $53,000 to $92,000 most recently.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. We're so glad you joined us. My name's Jade Aaron Gross. I am a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. I've been an insurance broker for 25 plus years, and my primary client base is made up of real estate professionals dealing in multifamily, retail, warehouse, office, and development. Based on this, I'm continually looking for more information about real estate investing so that I can better serve my clients and for my own investing. The result of these efforts has led to the creation of Commercial Real Estate Pro Network and CREPN Radio. If you like what we're doing, be sure to take a minute and subscribe to our show on iTunes. And if you would, leave a comment on the show and let us know what you think. We've got some great guests lined up, and your comments and subscriptions help us when we're trying to track these guests. So again, if you like what we're doing, please let us know and please subscribe. Also, I want to make a quick note. If you have any real estate insurance questions, be sure to reach out to me. I'll do all I can to help. You can reach out to me at jdarrengross.com in the contact information. And lastly, before we get on with the show, if you're on LinkedIn, I encourage you to check out Commercial Real Estate Pro Network, our group. There's a lot of great professionals in there, an opportunity to network with commercial real estate professionals. All right, let's get on with our show. Today's guests are two guys that teamed up to get out of the uncertainty of the corporate life and also the restaurant owner gig. Together, they grew their multifamily doors in 3 years to 675 doors. My guests are Jake Cinziano and Gino Barbaro. Together, they are Jake and Gino of jakeandgino.com. They've written a best-selling book on Amazon called Wheelbarrow Profits, and their story is one of patience, struggle, and ultimately conquering their first deal, the first deal that challenges so many would-be commercial real estate investors. Here now are Jake and Gino. All right, on the line, I've got Gino Barbaro and Jake Cinziano. Did I say that right, Jake?
Cinziano, there you go.
Cinziano, all right. Well, guys, hey, thanks for taking some time to join me today, and looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks, Darren.
Yeah, you bet. So if we could start a little bit, and I'm just going to tell the audience here, you guys have a company, jakeandgino.com, or Jake and Gino, is that the company name, and then the jakeandgino.com is the website, is that correct?
One and the same. That's right.
All right. And you guys are real estate investors. You've got a bunch of multifamily. I think I read in a couple different places your unit counts. Is it north of 700 units now? Is that correct?
674 with values about $32 million right now.
Wow. And before we get into all of your investment stuff, if I could get a little bit of background on both of you. Gino, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in real estate?
Sure. I owned a business for over 20 years. I was in the restaurant business. With Jake's help and with my partner's help, I was lucky to, quote-unquote, retire last month from it. Go to real estate full time, which is great. I mean, I've been tracking along this path for the last 20 years. You know, when an entrepreneur gets into a business, I guess the end game is always in mind. When can I get out? When can I make enough money to get out and do something else? And, you know, I finally realized that I started investing with Jake full time about three and a half years ago. And we were just able to hit an emerging market, really just did really well over the last 3 years. We bought a property, bought another property, as we'll talk about later. I was really fortunate to do that. Didn't like the restaurant anymore for obvious reasons. A lot of hours, a lot of hard work. basically paycheck, and that's what really drew me to real estate.
Got it. And Jake, what? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I'll go back to 2010. I was living in and working Westchester County, New York, for a top three pharmaceutical manufacturer, and I was doing most of my catering, for the business through Gino's Restaurant. And going back to 2010, I was just starting to, I guess, how many years ago? That's 6 years ago. I was 28. You're starting to, learn how the world works, and you start to look at your paycheck and realize, 50% is going to taxes and things like that. So I said to my, was my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, I said, this is kind of crazy. What are we doing? There's places out there that are much more affordable. And so I started doing some searches online, looking for places that didn't have state income taxes, looking for places with low property taxes. And through our searches and filtering, we found that Knoxville, Tennessee was really what we were looking for. We'd get back to New York within a day if we had to. It didn't have any state income tax. The property taxes are extremely low. It's got great weather. It's a good place to raise a family. So I was able to get a transfer within the pharmaceutical company to Knoxville. And at the time, I was also looking to do something else because the pharmaceutical company I was with, I don't know if they had 6 or 8 layoffs, and I was just waiting for my number to get called because it was just a matter of time because the company kept downsizing and downsizing. The healthcare reform really hit them hard. So I said, look, we got to do something here because this is not going to work long term. And right before I left, I was having lunch with Gino's brother, Marco, and he said, if you're interested in real estate, you got to talk to my brother because he knows real estate. And Gino came out, and we actually started looking at deals right then and there on the spot before I went down. And from there, I ended up moving to Knoxville, and we started looking at properties from there.
Wow. And the research, how long were you doing research before you decided that Knoxville was a place you wanted to be?
That took me probably about 6 months before I made that jump. And it didn't necessarily have to do with just, oh, we think this is going to be a great market to invest in. This was more of a personal thing. I was looking for lower cost of living and just some better weather because New York, it's not the best weather, that's for sure.
But right. Right. All right. So let's back up here a little bit then. So you said in 2010 you started looking and or that you were in the pharmaceutical industry then. When did you guys start working together? And actually, Gino, it sounds like you've got a little bit longer history in real estate. Could you speak a little bit to that as far as when you got started in real estate?
Oh, sure. My parents were always real estate investors. They're immigrants from Italy. So, they came over here and they had that mindset of own and not sell. So the restaurant that I have is parents own the commercial building and they have apartments upstairs. So, in the restaurant business, when it snows, you ain't getting paid. But, we have 3 apartments upstairs. You're getting paid every day. So I made the connection real early on that, real estate's where to be. But, in New York, it was difficult to accumulate assets because of the high property taxes, the high insurance, the high labor costs. So I started buying back in 2002 as my first property in New York. So you can see the time lag that I had between that first purchase and, hooking up with Jake. The restaurant was doing great at the time. Once 08 hit, that's when the economy sort of tanked, as everyone knows. And, the business really slowed down. That's where I started looking outside. But in 2002, I bought my first 3-family property and I was hooked. I did the classic mistakes of every investor. I overfixed. I overpaid, but you know what? I have time on my side. I've owned the property for 12 or 13 years. So those mistakes tend to level themselves out, although you don't want to make those mistakes. So that's where I really learned my big mistakes was that first property. And, I didn't look at it as it's all about the numbers, but real estate really is all about the numbers. And it's not what you buy, it's what you pay. So those two, I guess tragic mistakes I made in the beginning was great because the property wasn't a huge property. So I learned those really early on. So I bought that property, still have it now. Bought another commercial property in New York, which I probably shouldn't have. I bought it right before the downturn. So I bought it on all on good numbers, good cap rate. It was good cash flow. But a year later, everything just, as everyone knows, crapped out and the property really took a big hit. I still own it, trying to sell it now. I just learned one thing that I did not want to be in commercial. I wanted, as Jake likes to say, people can't live in the internet. So they need apartments to live in. And, you know, the commercial is difficult, especially up here, a lot of vacancies. These big box stores are really downsizing. So there's less space, I think. The office space is getting hit also. People are telecommuting. They're working from home. So I just don't see that market as being, you know, viable going forward. Unless you're in a Class A, you know, shopping area, very difficult to get into that space. It's very competitive on that high level. But the cap rates, like as we were talking about, they're compressed at that level. So what kind of return are you getting? A 2 or 3 cap? It's something that is, to me, is risky. So fast forward after that property, took my lumps, learned on that property also. And I just said, you know, to Jake back in 2010, let's do something. I jumped on LoopNet and I saw what they were trading down in Knoxville. I'm like, wow, you can get a 2-bedroom unit for $30,000 a unit and you're getting $600 a month in rent. That just made total sense to me. I said, wow, this property, if you break it down in 4 years, you have this, you know, apartment basically paid off. I said, that would never happen in New York. So that's when the light bulb went off for me.
Wow. You know, you mentioned that first property in the lessons. I think I remember my first property and just the lessons, and also just the fact that you get into the market. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have conversations with people that talk about getting into real estate and never do. And for all the reasons and the fear and all those emotions, I remember feeling when I got in. But I mean, I think that, you know, there's that point of either you commit or you don't. And I think, you know, there's the unknown. You had to jump in.
Well, Darren, what I find to be interesting is, you know, everyone in their life has to learn certain skills. As a baby, you learn how to walk. You don't just get up and start walking, right? I mean, I think people expect to get into real estate and learn from day one, and that will never happen. And they get, you know, they get disillusioned and they make one or two mistakes and they're out of it. I mean, how many things do you have to do in life that it takes a long time to master that skill? And I think if people stick to it, and, you know, when you first start out, there's a lot of things you should do. I mean, I guess we'll go over them later, but you really should pick a niche and try to focus on what you want to accomplish and what you want to buy. I didn't do that in the beginning. I just wanted to jump into real estate and buy anything. I didn't have as much education as I should have when I first started. You know, during about 5 or 6 years ago, I went to get real estate coached, and that really, really helped me a lot because it gave me the education that I was lacking. So I think people, they are disillusioned. They say, I'm just going to get into it. But that's great. You want the momentum, because that's what it did with me and Jake. We got into our first property. It gave us some momentum and I guess the courage to get into the next one. But we already sort of had the education. So, and I already made those mistakes. So the typical person would have said, you know what? I make 1, 2, 3 mistakes, I'm out. I've made more than 3 mistakes. I mean, I've made a big mistake on a property where we did some trailer parks. I didn't get any of the documentation. I got nothing. I lost a lot of money in that deal. So the average person would say, you know what? Forget about it. I went and I learned all about syndications. I learned what about private placement memorandums were, what subscription agreements were. I didn't know any of that before I invested, and that's on me. But I took that bad experience and I tried to turn it into a better experience. And I think that's what, you know, the listeners really have to do. We're all going to make mistakes, and that's what life's all about. It's about making mistakes. But if you make the mistake, just see what happens and try not to, you know, replicate that. Try to learn from it and try to turn that problem into an opportunity.
Right. No, and I think, too, there's something I read a while back that talked about, you know, if you have one property that's a loser or that's not making you money, then, you know, don't give up. But you need to find some better deals and, you know, kind of learn like that lesson you said and try and find them actually cash flow. And you know, over time, it will all work out. But it's not, you're not going to be competing with Donald Trump on your first deal kind of thing. So,
nope.
I actually, Darren, let me speak to that for a minute because it's just, you're talking about you're not going to be Donald Trump on your first deal, and I think people can do a lot better than Gino and I did on our first deal in terms of just your systems and putting things into place to make your ownership experience more professional. Our first deal was a 25-unit complex, and we are owner managers, and we're managing this complex. I was running the day-to-day. And we couldn't get into a deal. It took us 2 years to get into our first deal. We just had a ton of rejection. We were trying creative financing, and we were just getting no traction. Brokers were saying, you know, we want to have you sign this exclusivity agreement. And we didn't know what that was at the time. And so we did not sign it. And eventually, we quit. I went out and bought a house, and it just didn't look like it was going to go anywhere. And that was my seed money at the time. Then a few months later, we get the itch again, and this 25-unit complex comes up. we said, okay, let's give it another shot. We went, spoke to the broker, and it was on the market for what, Gino, 2 years, was it?
Yeah, a good 2 years.
It was on the market, and no one wanted to touch it. And not knowing the area, the reason was it had a lot of undesirable folks living in it. It was in a good area. It just didn't have – the people living there were doing a lot of drugs, and the owners were not taking care of the place. So we had an offer in. We offered 10% owner financing. We got the price down a little bit. So we got into the deal. Thing was, we didn't really know how to manage a property. So I was going there 3 times a week at least, knocking on doors, collecting cash. It was a mess. Had no idea what we were doing. And I can't believe we actually got through that deal, but it was terrible. I had people just that were getting the cops called all the time. Long story short, we smartened up quick. You know, we evicted the bad folks. We started cleaning the property up. Even the mail lady said after we were into it for a year, she thanked us because she said, I was afraid to deliver mail here. Okay. Yeah. And this was in a good area, though. So we made a ton of mistakes. We were doing it all wrong from the beginning, but we learned. We learned so much. It was such valuable insights in what not to do from the beginning, and we quickly adapted. But that's the thing you have to be prepared for. If you get into it and you're not too sure and you don't really get, you know, super educated going into it, you need to be able to adapt quickly and make those changes, or you will sink. And that's one of the things we did really well, and we were able to quickly I call it joking around. I said, let's professional up sometimes. But basically, we're scaling up, learning the business, and doing the things we needed to do to become more professional.
But Darren, one of the things about that property, we did buy it right. I mean, I remember exactly. It was listed for $750,000. We got the price down to $600,000. And the reason why we did that is we just asked. We had the lady actually, when we went through the inspection, she actually repaired a couple of roofs for us. She did a little bit of work on it. The property cash flowed. The numbers worked really well on the property. So that was like a buffer for us. At least we bought the property right. That's one of the first things we did. We probably could have gotten another 30 or 40 grand knocked off. But hey, looking in hindsight, it still worked out great. If we had a better relationship with a bank, we probably would have gotten better terms. The interest rate at the time we got was 5.5%. Rates at the time were 4.25, 4.5. We only got a 20-year amort on the property. So, you know, right now we're getting 25. So that would have helped us a little with the cash flow. But the bottom line was we got it for a good number. The numbers worked. I knew how to analyze the numbers at least. So that was a big, big help for us.
The term amort, the rate, everything, we did, I was like, man, we screwed the pooch on all that. But here's the thing, though. We have tenants thanking us. They love the community now. It's a great quiet setting. It's beautiful. People love living there. And it's one of our best performers, actually, because we did buy it right. Now we're managing it right, and now we have it financed right. So the learning experience, it was a crash course in multifamily 101. But it was well worth it, though.
You know, I've talked with other owners that have had similar experiences. I remember one conversation where a guy, he had bought a property and thought he was going to have a quick flip or something like that, and did not realize the elements that were in play, specifically the tenants. And his story, I remember him speaking kind of like what you just told, was, you know, just, oh, my God, what do I got? But what I'm curious about, I mean, the fact that you guys are managing and this is your first property, right? I mean,
yep.
The multifamily.
Yep.
So what was that like? I mean, I know when I have a tenant that doesn't pay on time, there's a call, an email, a text or whatever, a late fee, and there's some the rent comes in. But when you're the new guy and they're used to performing this way, and they're probably going to test you to see how much they can get away with, and it already sounds like it's a little bit of a sketchy, kind of a scary crowd. What was that like?
Well, go ahead, Gino, sir.
No, I remember specifically, I'll tell you, Darren, when I knew we were going to do really well at this, I remember the first week Jake went out to collect rent. He was a W-2 earner, so he's used to people getting a paycheck. I was always used to being in business and people paying me. So I remember the first week he went out there, he was like a kid in a candy store. He's like, I got all this cash money, I got all this rent. So I said, Jake's hooked. I mean, people are paying him. It's a different mindset now, you know what I mean? I said, well, the first thing is we're not going to take cash anymore. The second thing is we had weekly renters, which that business model is just awful in a lot of ways, especially
a lot of work.
In that
bad tenant
setting, because – it's a lot of turnover. It's a lot of tenant turnover. The numbers are great. You know, they're paying, you know, another $150, $200 a month in rent. But, you know, they're there for 2 weeks. Place gets vacant. So you can see what was happening. So I already knew the long-term vision of what had to happen. But I just thought it was just an awesome thing when I heard him, like giggling almost that he had all his money. I'm like, this is what being an entrepreneur is. It's just going out and getting money. And as far as the tenants, I said, Jake, you know, these tenants are our clients. You have to look at them as people. We need to respect. The modern affordability came into play. That's what we call our company. We want to give modern affordability to our tenants. We want to treat them as clients, but at the same time, we need to get paid. So we have strict policies, especially now, but even in the beginning, if they couldn't pay by the 5th, they're getting the notice. And if they can't pay, you have to bring them to court. And that's one thing with Tennessee and with people when they go do market research. Up here in New York, the tenant laws are definitely skewed to the tenant. Down in Tennessee, they're not. They're skewed more to the landlord. So if you don't pay, you have to get out because we need the money to keep this place up and running. So we learned early on about, you know, evicting tenants, and it's not personal. I just said to Jake, listen, it's going to be hard in the beginning because you're going to have a relationship with these people. I said, just buffer it. Pretend you're the property manager slash part owner, but you have partners you have to adhere to. And that's one thing I learned. When you get into partnership with people, it's awesome because you'll do more for your partner than you will for yourself sometimes. So you'll go that extra mile for somebody else and say, listen, I have to be held accountable. So I'm going to collect that rent because my partners are looking for me to do it. If you're doing it yourself, you're like, ah, you know what? I'll let it go for another day or two. But when you have a partnership, you have those certain rules that you have to adhere to. And, you know, tenants need to know that it's not just Jake's money. It's the partnership's money. And we have to pay the bank. The bank ain't waiting. You want the grass cut. You want to have all your utilities in place. We need the money to pay that. And whatever's left over, hopefully there's something left over. It's ours.
Yeah. And Gino's so right. Don't do weekly renters. That was a disaster. We quickly got away from that. And don't take cash because that's not good either. So we quickly got rid of the weekly renters. We quickly made everyone pay at least by check or money order. And to answer your first question about follow-up, I've been in sales my entire life, so I don't mind being naggy and annoying. And I was just there beating on doors. That's literally what I had to do. It wasn't a letter. I was there knocking on the door saying, you know, look, we need to get paid. We need to do it. And that will wear you out quick. And we got away from that as we got better tenants in and we refurbished the units. But that's really what it came down to, was just, you know, showing up and saying, I'm going to be there to collect. And if you didn't have it, then we would just go through the process. You know, they get the letter and then they get the 14-day eviction. And we went from there. And as we turned it over, we got better folks in because we started rehabbing the units as we went. And that's how we turned it around.
Well, we started doing applications too. They weren't doing applications.
Oh yeah, they weren't even doing applications, wow. Background checks or anything. It was just, you come with the cash, you're getting the key.
Wow. Well, you know, Jake, tell them the story of when we took the property over. You had to go knock door to door to see if there were people actually there and where they were paying rent.
Yeah, they had commingled funds in their bank accounts because they had multiple rentals throughout the town. So we really couldn't make heads or tails of who was paying, what the rents were. My uncle actually has some rentals in the past. So I said, what am I going to do about this? I need to know what these people's rents are so I can at least verify that what the income is per month. So I actually had to go door to door knocking to verify the rents. And I say, is your rent, you know, $700 a month? Is your rent $600 a month? And people were like, yes, it is. And there was people in each of the units. Don't know if they were paying or not at the time, but there were they had a pulse. So –
wow. Well, and how cool is it that you guys were able to turn it, and just even then the confirmation from even the mail carrier, you know, to actually have the community recognize the effort you put in, and now it's a desirable place.
They have a community garden now where the people that are there, they come in the garden together. It's a really cool place. Yeah.
How long did
Derek, this is one thing I would tell all your listeners to do. If you have a property, create a survey. What I did after the first 6 months, we sent out a survey to all the tenants, made a self-addressed stamped envelope to my house. So I was surprised that I got back a few letters. And what was so positive about it was they'll tell you what's right, they'll tell you what's wrong. So it's great. If there's something that's not right on the property, that you have a problem, they'll tell you. So that's something that you can address. But at the same time, they're telling you what happened. So, I mean, I got letters like, this is finally home. I'm coming home. I closed my door. I feel like I'm coming home. So that's when you see letters like that from your surveys, you're like, wow, you're doing something great. It's a great feeling because you're making money, but at the same time, you're putting a roof over somebody's head.
Right. How long did it take you guys to from the start to get it turned where you had the better tenants? And
what do you think, Gino? Was it, a year maybe?
Yeah, I think a year. And then what happened?
Since the septic field, February 2013. Yeah. So I would say probably about a year.
Well, that's a great story. And, you know, I'm happy for you guys, because I can't imagine, you know, just that whole everybody's got their own little pay plan and stuff. And I know I was looking at a property a little while back, and nothing was conventional. This guy had now everybody pays every 2 weeks, and everybody's got a different deal. And I was like, how do you, your story, I can't take this to a bank. You know, yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, you know. But that's great. And I love the fact that you guys found something that had been on the market for a while. I mean, kind of grown stale. And
a lot of our stuff has been that, actually.
Yeah, I think that's where the opportunity is, as opposed to the newer stuff. I was curious about the broker you guys went through. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about your broker experience. You mentioned in the beginning the exclusivity agreement they were asking that you sign. Can you speak a little bit about your experience there with the brokers?
Sure. I'll take this real quick. I mean, we were lucky in the very beginning. I think they hear the name Gino and the way I speak fast, and they don't like the New Yorkers down south. And that's probably part on me. You got to try to build rapport with people. And, you know, I was just trying to get into a deal. And, you know, the first guy is like, you're never going to do business here. This is not how we do business. And I was like, I've never heard of an exclusivity wanting to be signed. The guy sent me a deal 3 days after I had seen it somewhere else. I told him, listen, I already saw this deal. And that's when he went off on me. So I said, Jake, I don't know what's going on here. We were really fortunate. The first deal that we've been alluding to had the broker there. And, you know, what I would stress,
this was a different broker, just to clarify.
Oh, yeah, it was a different broker. But the broker on the deal, everyone who's going to get into multifamily, go on LoopNet and look and see who's listing multifamily properties. You want to work with a broker who's in the market. You don't want to deal with a broker who's selling single family homes and then all of a sudden he's going to go to multis. Because this broker that we had, that we used, he was very savvy. He knew exactly owner financing. He was the one who structured the deal. He was the go-between between us and the seller. And he really structured the deal really well for us. He helped us out a lot. He gave us connections with the bank. He gave us our title company. I mean, he really had a lot of contacts. He'd been doing it for a while, and down the road we've bought three or four more deals with him, as far as deals that don't hit the market, or as far as him having contacts with people in the town that he knows. He has tons of relationships, and that's where people got to really focus on trying to network with a great broker, because brokers can bring a ton of value to your deals.
Yeah, that's what I'm understanding more and more, and especially on the commercial side, is that the a good broker will have a list of buyers, essentially the investors that are ready to pull the trigger. And they don't necessarily put a sign up on every deal that they get. They're going to first run it by their investors that they know are buyers. And so that's good.
Yeah, first look at a lot of deals now, because we have the relationships with, say, the top five brokers in our area. And so they'll shoot stuff over to us, you know, well before it goes on the market, to give us a, you know, crack at it.
But Darren, to speak to that, you have to convey to the broker exactly what you're looking for. So, I mean, when the broker knows that we're looking for a distressed property that we can add value to, we want it at least minimum now 50 units. We want it in a C to C plus property class. We want it in an emerging market on the south side. We're looking for between 35,000 and 40,000 a unit. Expenses about 3,500 a door. You want to be really, really specific with your broker. Let him know you speak the lingo, and let him know exactly what you're looking for. So when he gets that, he's going to come right to you. He's not going to come to you with a fourplex, because right now we're just not in the market to buy fourplexes anymore. But he knows when he gets a bigger asset and it's in our wheelhouse, he's going to come exactly to us.
Right. But gaining that clarity and being able to speak, you know, to the broker on that, so that they, I mean, nobody's wasting anybody's time. That's what it is.
Yep, exactly.
Everybody has an opportunity to get paid. Well, that's an awesome story. All the lessons you learned there and the experiences, how'd the next one come about? I mean, that was, how many units was the first deal? Was it
25?
25. Okay.
So, how'd the next one come about? Well, I'll give you a quick rundown of the portfolio, and then you can pick and choose which one you'd like to talk about. From there, we went on to buy 36 units. Following that, we bought 136 units, And following that, we went back down a little bit, bought a 24 unit, and it really worked well. We trying to stay in 100 units or above. And then we bought 281 units. And then one of the people that sold us one of the properties before had one. They were just trying to liquidate, so we picked up a 16 unit in a great location. And then was it last month we just closed on 156 units, and with an opportunity to build an additional 16 units on that same property.
Got it. And so the 36 one, the second property, you buy the first one, you spend a year, changing the atmosphere, the way things are done, upgrading the property as far as the tenants go, and the property's net. How long was it before you got the second property?
6 months.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And how, distance-wise, how far apart are these?
20 minutes, maybe 25. All within the what would be considered the Knoxville MSA, I guess.
Gotcha. And are all of your properties in that area?
Yes.
All right. And so as far as Gino's out of state, but Jake, you're on the ground there. Boots on the ground managing these properties day to day, correct?
Correct.
Now, are you still doing the pharmaceutical, or are you out of that now?
No. I was in the middle of last year. I got out.
Okay. Got it. And
real estate just kind of imposed its will, did not really have the ability to do it, the juggle anymore.
Well, and you've clearly reached a level of significance to where, it can support you. And Gino, did you say you're out of the restaurant business now too as well?
Yes, I am. I think our long-term strategy is what Jake's doing is he's trying to really build out the management company and really trying to build a system. I wouldn't say franchisable, but my goal is in the next month I'm going to be moving down to Jacksonville, Florida, just to expand the portfolio. I'm going to move down with the family. I've got a big family. We're all getting down. We're all going down there. We're going to move down there. And I want to be able to take his model and use his, management model and just move it down there. So basically, if it doesn't work for me and me and Jake decide to go into another market, we can't self-manage these properties. We can impose our will on a management company and say, here, these are our systems. This is exactly how we want to run our management company. Can you do it? And I think that's really important if you want to go out of market. You really need to have experience managing a property and then the ability to manage the manager. So you have to know how to manage a property and then actually tell somebody how you want your property managed. So that's where we're at right now. 675 units is, we've got three different leasing agents on the properties, spread about. We've got a ton of maintenance. We've got a pretty big staff. The hardest thing I think was just scaling up and actually looking at this as a viable business. Cause when you're doing 25 units, it's not really a business. It's a mom and pop. But when you start, cashing 675 checks, all of a sudden you need to have a check scanner. You need to start taking in payments online. When you have a smaller business, those things you don't have to worry about. But as you get bigger, there's certain obstacles that come your way that they're solvable, but you've never done them before. But you just have to start looking outside the box to take a look at these problems.
Right. No. And I I've heard that others have spoken to it about. The step between being a property manager and it sounds like you're becoming more of an asset manager. As you create your systems and push them down to a management staff, whether it be in-house or subcontracted out, but more of an asset manager and kind of more of that 30,000-foot view.
I would say this year is all about for us is about our systems and just tying up any loose ends in our financing. That's probably the two biggest things we're working on this year.
Got it. And the area, so right now Knoxville is kind of where you've planted your flag, and it looks like you're going towards Jacksonville. Are you guys playing that? Is it C plus? Is that what I heard? Heard you say?
The last property we bought was a B. We like C's because C's have a little deferred maintenance. There's always a little value add on C's. It all depends about the cap rates. We were buying, when we first started buying, we were buying at, you know, the C's were like a 9 caps. Now the C in Knoxville is probably between a 7.5 and an 8 cap actual. So, I mean, I love B's. B's are a little bit better. They're a little less deferred maintenance, but there's, you know, obviously less cash flow on the property. As long as you can find something with a value-add component, I definitely want to focus between B and C properties. D's, they're hard. That's not our model. They're distressed. They're in a bad neighborhood. You know how it goes. It's just hard to collect the rents. The numbers are great, but if you can't collect the rent, what's a cap rate, right?
Right.
And I always tell Jake, the AA assets, you know, in 10 years, talk to me when we have the wealth, when we've created the wealth. We're in creation mode right now. So, you know, the A's are the guys who have the wealth and just want to generate a 2 or 3 cap, and they just want to maintain their wealth. So we sort of stay away from A's also.
Right. And your guys, long-term buy and hold, or are you do any flips, or what's your?
Yeah, I'm just buy and hold. You know, our model is buy right, manage right, and finance right. So we may, you know, refi a property and pull some cash out and you know, put that towards the next property. But typically, you know, what we're, you know, it's to Gino's point, we're buying these C properties, and we have a framework that we use. We go in, typically we're looking for some vacancies, and then we'll fill those vacancies up at market rates, because a lot of the stuff we're finding, they haven't been managed properly, so they have a lot of people that are under market. We'll fill those up at the market rate, and then we'll implement RUBS. If you're not familiar with RUBS, it's ratio utility billing systems. Essentially, we're going to bill the tenants back for their water usage. Creates a quite a bit of extra cash flow. And then in about, you know, 9 months to a year out from that point, we're going to go in and then we're going to raise the remaining tenants up to market rate slowly. And that's really our repositioning process there. And then we're going to buy it, hold it, you know, we're going to maybe refi it, and then roll that money into the next deal.
No, I like it. I've always thought of myself as a buy and hold guy. Tell me about the challenges and the benefits of being a partnership and having investors.
I mean, I like partnerships. I've been in partnerships my whole life. I was with my brother. He's still at the restaurant. You know, you have to be on the same page with a partner. Jake and I are on the same page. We're pretty much, he's 10 years younger than me, but we still have that time horizon where we do want to buy. We do want to cash flow, we do want to hold, and we want to refi. So we have all the same mindset. We have specific skill sets that complement each other. So I think it's important to get a partner where you're on the same page. But I think what I like about it is, you know, Jake will have a tough time one day. He'll give me a call. I'm detached from it. He'll say, you know, what should I do here? And I'll do the same thing to him. It's always great to be able to talk to somebody about a problem who's, you know, intimately involved and the other one's not. You get different perspectives on it. It's good to be able to lean on somebody. And as I said before, sometimes you're just not willing to do it. But if you've got to get a blog out, or you've got to get a tenant in the space, you're going to do it because everyone else is relying on you. So it gives you that little push, that little impetus to get it done. And obviously, you know, the capital that you're allowed to, you know, bring about with, you know, more partners, you can get into bigger deals. And someone says, well, you know, you own less of the deal. But if you can get into a 100 unit deal with partners, I mean, you have the economies of scale there. You're able to cash flow more, and then when that thing gets refied, you'll be able to get into bigger properties. You always want to, I think your goal is to get into bigger properties because you have that economies of scale. You're able to hire a team and you're able to get some stuff off of your back and become that entrepreneur you want to become, because you like you said, you want to asset manage. You don't want a landlord. Landlording is not where the money's made, and I know that because when I have my 3 family, I get more phone calls from the 3 family than I'm sure Jake gets from the 25 family once he has a resident manager there, because I'm the landlord. Something goes wrong, I've got to take care of the problem. So when you have these bigger assets, you're managing the numbers, it's just a totally different mindset.
Yeah, I'll add to that a little bit too, because I think one of the things that makes our partnership so successful is that we know we can count on each other, and we hold each other accountable, but both of us are reliable. So if Gino says he's going to do something, I don't have to, you know, ask him about it. I just know it's going to get done. And I think that's the same thing for him. And it basically allows us to be in 2 places at once and get twice the amount of work done. I would not get in business with somebody that you can't rely on and they're not going to be there to get the job done, because then it's just going to make it more stressful and you're going to want to, you know, get out of that partnership after a while. So before you get into business with somebody, I would say just make sure you can count on that person and they're going to, you know, do the same amount of work and get the job done as you would do.
And let me add one more thing. I think the other thing with partnerships is you have more ideas. So you have twice as many ideas. You're looking at a problem, and there's two people looking at that problem to solve it. And if I think that's where the money is made from ideas. So Jay can say to me, well, this 25-unit property, you know, I don't like these weekly renters. What should we do? So he had somebody to bounce that off. And I said, listen, I don't like the weekly. Let's try monthly. So that whole, you know, way of generating ideas through partnerships. We have three guys, and there's three guys always looking at one problem on how to solve it. So you have more input into that problem, and it'll be more likely that you'll come up with a solution with three guys as opposed to one guy by himself.
Right. No, you were talking about having more units under management and partnership and just the leverage aspect. I think that's one of the things that I've really come to understand here in the last couple of years, is that the goal is to get as many units as much, value under management for the appreciation over time, and as those rents grow up, you know, and then also just the whole cap rate thing, how the money is made. It's not, you know, when I single family, my mindset originally was buy and pay the mortgage down, then I get to keep the rent or at least a larger portion of it. But I think that whole when you understand that commercial side of things and the cap rates and just getting into that property and continue to push the rents up, that's where the value, that's how you create additional value.
You can be old if you're going with that strategy before you see any of that money, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But Darren, one of the problems I see with single family homes, more than multis, is everyone is in single family homes. There's so much competition in that space that if you're not buying back in 2009, 2010, when you're buying at whatever, 40, when the hedge funds were buying at 40 or 50 cents on the dollar, now everyone's in that space. So you're really, the margins are not that great in that space because everyone's bidding it up, especially on the East Coast where everyone's buying singles and duplexes. Because I think the mindset is, you know, I own my personal home. I can't afford to get into commercial. So I'm looking at anything five and more. I can't do it. So I'm going to stay with the smaller assets. And I think that creates a lot of competition. And you know what happens when there's a lot of competition? There's a lot of price, you know, there's a lot of it gets reflected on the price, and that's one of the problems I see with single family homes.
Oh, absolutely. And you're competing against a whole nother pool of buyers, you know. Mm-hmm. you're competing against people that want to make it their home, and so, you know, naturally the competition is higher. And my eyes were opened wide when I first bought my first in a distressed property, and immediately it was cash flowing. I was going, holy crap. I mean, what have I been doing? You know, cause I was doing it, you know, I was paying full retail before and yep. bleeding, you know, hundreds of dollars a month on every property, thinking I could make it up on volume. And, you know, finally I found one where I bought it, distressed, and, it was just instant cash flow, and it's still one of my better performing properties today.
That's great.
Wanted to ask you a little bit more about raising capital. What's been your go-to for raising capital? You mentioned in the beginning your first deal. It sounded like you got a little impatient there, if you will, or at least I think it was Jake was talking about how he ended up buying a house instead of using his seed money to buy the first property. What have you guys done for raising capital or your financing? You mentioned, well, I'll let you speak a little bit about it.
Well, it's funny because when he told me he bought the house, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You're killing me here. You know, I was like, we haven't even started yet. I mean, and you know, fortunately,
well, tell him I almost made the same mistake a few weeks ago, but go ahead.
That's right. Yeah. And you know what? It's funny to see the partnership. I reeled him in. I did my life coaching on him. I said to him, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but let me ask you some empowering questions. And on the first deal, I wasn't the coach yet. So I said, this guy's killing me. I mean, he bought the house, and he bought a great house. He bought it. The numbers were great, and he's still living there. And I probably, hopefully he'll still live there for the next 10 years. But the first deal was like, you know, we got to 10%, so I know exactly we had to come up with $27,000, the three of us, which was, you know, it was doable. And we bought that first one. The second one was another great property, but we got another partner in. He's a great partner. He had a really strong balance sheet. I've learned a lot from him. I would guess we'd consider him one of my mentors. We bought that property. Same thing, 20% down. We all came up with about $25,000 each. The third property, the big one, I just scraped my life savings. I got everything we could get together to get that property. We actually
hit my 401k on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you do – when you see the deal that we did, I mean – this deal, I was doing $53,000 a month in gross rents. It was like 80% occupied. The rents were $450 a month. We got them up to $600 a month. The first month, they did $53 a month. Last month, we hit $92,000 a month. All so right. we took the value from $4 million and it appraised out at $6.5 million. So we were able to cash out $1.6 million on this property, and we'd only put $800,000 into the property. So that seed money that we pulled out is what, you know, propelled us to go into the bigger deals. But that third deal was hard because, you know, we had to come up with, you know, almost $800,000. We had a partner who lent money to the partnership. He got paid back when we refied. The broker actually took a note on part of his commission because we didn't have the money. So, you know, when we refied, we paid him back his $50,000 note. He was happy because he was getting $400 or $500 a month. He wanted to make the deal work. And that was, it was their typical value add. We didn't have to do a lot of heavy lifting where people go in there, they spend $10,000 a unit to rip out cabinets and all. We basically had a little deferred maintenance, painting, it was tenant issues. It worked out awesome for us. And then the next one, the 281 units, is I think one of our better deals. It was listed for $12.6 million on LoopNet. It was on there for a while. Owners were old. They wanted to sell. They came out back with an offer for us at $11 million, and they wanted to offer 20% owner financing. So on that deal, we basically came out with zero out of our pocket, maybe $100,000 as an escrow to the bank. But the reason why that worked was we had the credibility already. We had some units on the belt. We had a business plan. The bankers liked us. They knew us, and they knew if we crapped out on the deal, we didn't pay, that the sellers would just come back and take the property back that they had been running for the last 40 years. So for them, it was really low risk. We got great terms, and that's how we were able to buy those units, basically with no money out of our pockets. People say you can't do it. Well, we had the same broker from the first deal. He knew all about seller financing. I'm sure he must have prepped the seller and said, listen, just offer them some paper. And it worked great. We worked two different banks, a lot of moving parts. It wasn't an easy deal, but hey, we made it work. And same thing with the last deal we just did. We had to put money down, but we were fortunate that through the last 3 years, we've been able to refinance these properties. Like you keep saying, these value adds, you buy them with an NOI of a certain number, you raise that net operating income by cutting the expenses, because Jake runs these really properties. He runs them really well. He cuts out all the fat. We raise the revenue by, you know, implementing that RUBS that Jake talks about, by raising the rents, because we know the rents, what they should be in the market. A lot of landlords become lazy over time. They've owned this property for 20 years, so why should they raise the rents? They're happy with the tenants in there. We see that. Any investor who sees that, they have to jump on that. That's what a really huge value add is, and that's what we've been able to do.
Yeah, no, the progression. So, but it sounds like a lot of your financing has come then from, am I hearing, owner? Actually, that's not true. I hear that you guys have kind of done everything you can personally, whether it be cashing in 401ks or seed money or whatever. Has the owner financing been a big part of the balance of the units, based on, in some way, shape, or form, have owners typically provided?
Two deals. We've used owner financing in two deals. Yes.
Okay. Got it. And then your investors, are you syndicating these properties with investors, or are you borrowing money to raise capital?
No, it's really just me, Gino, and we have another partner. And on some of the deals, Gino's brother Marco has been involved on them as well. So it's either just the three of us or four of us.
Got it. There was a question I wrote down here, and I don't know if it applies. I'm going to throw it out there and see what your thoughts are. But I know, like in construction, they always talk about, you know, good, fast, and cheap, pick two. Is there a triangle you see in real estate investing that requires a similar balancing act? You know, I wrote down like some value, cash flow, price. Is there anything?
No, I think it goes back to our framework, which is, and that's exactly what our framework is, which is buy right, manage right, and finance right. Your deal's not going to work, and that's where we came up with the Wheelbarrow Profits. That's our number one best-selling Amazon book. Wheelbarrow Profits was based around buy right, manage right, and finance right, because we know that multifamily is essentially a three-legged stool. And that's why we look at the back leg of the wheelbarrow as being fixed, buy right. If you, you got a buy right going into it, and that price is not going to change. And then manage right, we look at the wheel of the wheelbarrow because it's constantly ongoing. It's spinning, okay? And then we look at finance right, because a lot of times we'll fix these properties up and then we'll refinance those to long-term fixed-rate financing, and that represents the other back leg of the wheelbarrow. So I think without a doubt, it's just funny that you brought that up, but that is very similar, I guess, if you will, to our framework.
Right. No, I love the model, though, in that if there's one thing that's broken, you can fix it. I mean,
you can't if you don't buy right. Oh, yeah, there's no going back on that one. But yeah, absolutely.
Right.
No,
but I think that's probably the critical piece to all of this. If it's not bought right, good management or good financing is not going to overcome that enough to
may
make
not
a
be
good
able
deal.
To save you if you pay too much. Correct.
Right. Right.
And I think that goes back to me always saying it's a business. I mean, who would buy a business like a restaurant or a deli or a car wash if it's losing money? I mean, why would you buy it if it's losing money unless you're buying it for the real estate or for some intrinsic value? You're buying something on numbers, and that's why people get caught up in real estate. We've had brokers show us, you know, the 36 unit. She looks out the window and goes, isn't that a beautiful view? And I'm saying to myself, Jake's telling me, like, what the heck is the view have to do with, you know, with anything in multifamily?
Right.
I mean, I'm here.
I'll never forget that.
You can get a $10 premium. You know what I'm saying? I'm like thinking to myself, these people have no idea. And they're commercial brokers and they have big listings. I'm thinking to myself, wow, these people have
Lady,
no
I'm
idea.
Not going to live here, okay?
No, and you know, that is such a huge piece to understand. I'm not going to live there. I remember talking with my wife when we were buying a property, and she was all in the cutesy of it. And I said, sweetie, you're never, ever going to spend the night here. I mean, this is, you know, uh-huh. I mean, and to her credit, she did pick out a property that has never had a, you know, difficult time renting because it was cute, et cetera. But, you know, it's the numbers. That's where the game's played. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. I'm running down my list here, and this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to do this. Goals for the future, continued growth. Is there anything...
Different. Yeah, I think we have, you know, very big goals. Number one, we want to be the largest apartment owners in East Tennessee. I think that's going to probably we'll probably need to get to about 3,000 units. But you know, we're knocking out two deals a year, and I know we'll get there eventually. And I know Gino's got goals in Jacksonville as well. But that's for our Tennessee area at least. Gino, what are you looking at?
My goals, I just really want to learn a business. I just want to connect with people. Just want to, you know, grow the Jake and Gino brand as far as the real estate education. I just want to change people's lives. I want to empower people. I want to be able to talk to people and say, listen, you can do it. I mean, it's simple, but it's not easy. Here's our framework. If you follow the framework and you follow the coaching and you follow the advice and you put in the hard work, you can do it. And I just want to be able to have people – just take, you know, the initiative and say, listen, I want to do this. I want to create passive income, and this is how you do it. And as far as the portfolio, I really want to build out the management company and be able to say, listen, Jake, let's go out to Phoenix and see what Phoenix has to offer. Let's be able to hire a management company out there, and let's be able to grow the portfolio out there.
I like it. Let's see here. I'm just kind of running on my list. And the only other thing that I think I want to run past you guys, there's a concept I kind of came up with, and I want to kind of use this as kind of a tease, if you will. I'll use it in some promotions. But if I could get you to reply to these three things, well, we've already talked about your first deal, but if you could just tell again, just for, so I can use this for the promotion, the first deal, your best deal, and your next deal.
Sure. And tell me how you want me to reply to it.
But what was your first deal? What was your first deal?
That was a 25 units. That was the first deal that we did. That was the one we owner financed 10%.
All right. Your best deal so far?
That would have to be our Park Place deal where we got into it and we refied it for $1 million. We pulled out $1.6 million. I think it was about less than 2 years after owning it. Took the rents from $53,000 to $92,000 most recently. Next deal is going to be up to the big daddy G-Dog Gino business going down to Jacksonville. Going to knock out 100 units coming up.
You feel the pressure? I'm feeling the pressure. Baby.
I like
I'm going to make it happen. Don't worry.
I like
kick down some doors and jacks. Going to do it.
That's awesome. And so what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
It's really difficult. It's going to either be Gino@JakeandGino.com or Jake@JakeandGino.com. And we will get back to you that day.
And hey guys, I want to make sure to give this to you right. A-N-D, right?
Yep. So Jake, at Jake and Gino, J-A-K-E-A-N-D, Gino.com or Gino@JakeandGino.com.
Got it.
Let me give a quick plug to Bigger Pockets out there. Anyone who's on real estate should be on Bigger Pockets. It's a great website. I've been on there for the last couple of months. Great place to start. Just to ask questions, posts, and stuff like that. I'm on there often. You can see me on there replying to people's questions. I think it's a great tool. It's an awesome site to be on, so you'll find us on there also.
Well, I think as of last night, you should have a new follower.
Yes, I saw it.
I found you guys on there. So.
Big Daddy Darren, yes. Coming to get you.
Yeah, there you go. Well, hey, guys, I can't say thanks enough for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can do this again soon.
Darren, you're the man. Thanks.
Thanks again for taking the time to listen today. I hope you found something in our talk with Jake and Gino that you can use or take with you and pass along. Don't forget to check out jakeandgino.com and also their book, Wheelbarrow Profits, on amazon.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.